This is Bodies, a show about exploring the mysteries of our bodies. I'm Allison Behringer. Kalalea's story begins in the same place that womanhood is said to begin, the first period. And for Kalalea, it set the stage for a mystery that would come to dominate her very experience of womanhood. It was 1982, and Kalalea was 11. She was small and slender then, just like she is today. It was summertime in Pittsburgh.
A bunch of my friends and family, we were on my grandmother's block.
They were playing the traffic cop game, where everyone's running, and then the traffic cop says,
"Red light, green light, yellow light, stop." Stop. And before I'm at the finish line, I felt like this weird sensation, like this, you know, wet, gooey feeling between my legs. So I ran to my grandmother's house and I just ran to the bathroom, pulled down my shorts, and I saw this red splotch of blood on my panties. And my grandmother was like, "What's going on?" I said to her, like, "I think I'm bleeding." And she just grabbed some toilet tissue and balled it up in her hand and handed it to me and was like, "Put this in your on your panties, like put this between your legs." And she told me, "Go sit down in the back room." My grandmother's back room was small, and all of the furniture was like way too big for the space. And there was this huge couch covered in plastic, but I knew better to sit on that couch because if you were 30 years or younger, that couch was pretty much off limits. If there was ever a time to sit on a plastic couch, I would think that time would be now. So she just pointed to this red plastic stool and just told me to go sit my butt down. "Your mother won't be home for a few hours now. Just watch some TV until she gets here." And she went into the bedroom and she laid on the bed. And that was like her favorite place in the world. If there's 24 hours in the day, I felt like I saw my grandmother in bed like 16 of those hours, doing crossword puzzles, reading the Bible. From that point on, I just felt like I had to be still. My friends were out playing. I was indoors and I was sitting there and just waiting. A lot of things changed on that day for me.
During her teens and early adulthood, Kalalea's life and her period were pretty normal. But that silence and stillness that surrounded her first period would return. She was in her late 20s, living in New York City, and her periods had gradually started getting more heavy, more painful.
I just had this ritual. It was my period ritual. Like, I would know, like, it's coming because I started getting cramps a couple days before. And I would just kind of, like, go into planning mode. Movies, music, food, water, granny panties, castor oil, towel, heating pad. And the most important item, stay free. Long overnight maxi pads with wings. If my period came on a Friday and I had plans on Saturday, I might cancel them. If I had on white sheets on my bed, I might remove those sheets, put on like my older sheets. You know, your friends can say, "I'm sorry, let me know if you need anything." But you are the one laid on top of red towels in the dark and just saying, "Just get to day three. And all this will be over. And then you'll have another 28 days." I didn't know enough to know that what was going on with me was more serious.
It started getting so bad that she'd have to miss work on the first, sometimes even the second day of her cycle. And so when she got a new boss, Kalalea had to explain herself.
I said to her, I just have to forewarn you, I have really bad periods, and it's just best for me to stay at home and work from home. And she had an issue with that.
And then one day she was having lunch with a coworker.
This coworker was a white woman.
And she told her coworker how her boss hadn't been understanding about needing to miss work during her period.
And she was like, yeah, I've always wanted to ask you about that. Like, I can't believe that you have to miss work. You know, that's horrible. And I was like, you don't ever have really bad periods? She was like, no, like 3-4 days done. It's not such a big deal. I think that was the realization for me that even though women didn't like having their periods, it wasn't as dire of an issue.
And as she started having this conversation with more and more of her friends, she started noticing a pattern.
It definitely occurred to me that the women who were dealing with period problems were all Black women.
Granted, Kalia says most of her friends are Black, so it's not a perfect sample, but still. And I think we often look to the women around us to figure out what's normal, what's healthy. But when those women are suffering from a similar pain, it can be a dangerous thing to calibrate our health to. It can normalize something that's not normal, not healthy. And as Kalia would later figure out, this collective experience of heavy periods was a symptom of an even more menacing condition affecting Black women. But for the time being, she continued with her life, her period ritual becoming more and more elaborate. It was the early 2000s, and Kalia was in her early 30s. She started a photography project called The Strangers Project, where she'd ask men that she met in the course of daily life if she could take their portrait. One of these guys was Mr. Singh, a taxi driver. And after she took his photo, they became friends, and she would ride around with him in his taxi.
And on the way home one day, I remember, like, it was this, like, gush. This gush of blood just kind of came out of my body. When you have on jeans, you feel it come out, but it doesn't have anywhere to go, so it just kind of, like, sits and squishes around. Kind of slightly opened my legs, and I can see that the blood had been seeping, like, out of my jeans onto his seat, like, a lot of it. I just said to him, I don't feel well.
He pulled over and Kalia ran across the street to a bodega to buy peroxide, her tried and true solution for removing blood.
There was this dusty brown bottle.
And by the time she got back, Mr. Singh had already cleaned up the back seat and laid down a bunch of towels.
I just kept thinking, I can't believe that I bled on Mr. Singh's car seat. Like, this man is the most religious and gentle and kind man that I've ever met. I couldn't imagine him even talking about periods with his own wife. I felt like I had defaced his property. So I just told him, I'm going to walk to the subway. Thank you so much. I'm really sorry. And he pointed to the front seat like, no, let me ride you. You can sit here, you know, sit here. And we pretty much rode the entire way home in silence.
Over time, as her period got worse, the list of places where Kalia bled grew.
I've bled on various bike seats.
I've bled in the movie theater.
New York City subway.
The Salvation Army.
In my best friend's living room.
In my boyfriend's bed.
On the beach.
In the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, a lot of places. A lot of places.
But in spite of all this, things were going well for her. She got really into vegetarian cooking and studying nutrition. She started traveling to West Africa, Mexico, the Dominican Republic. She also became a yoga instructor. And then one day, she fainted, hit her head on the way down. An ambulance took her to the hospital, and the doctor started asking her a series of questions.
Have you bumped your head lately? Do you play any sports? How about your period? Is it normal? And I said to him, well, what is normal? You know, I don't know. I guess I do have a fair amount of bleeding and pain during my cycle, but doesn't every woman?
And sure, she knew from her coworker that not every woman has periods like hers. But still, the doctor never used the word abnormal when talking about her periods. The doctor ordered a series of tests, and after a couple hours, he came back and he tells her,
so it looks like you're anemic. anemic. And I had never heard that word before, I don't think.
The reason that Kalalea fainted was because she was anemic, so the doctor prescribed some iron pills. But the doctor didn't ask her any more questions about her period, and so Kalalea left the hospital without knowing why she was anemic.
I don't think he connected because he didn't dig deep enough. You know how life is. You go on. A lot of people would say, like, how could you live like that for so many years? For me, I guess I just accepted that this was my thing, you know? Like, some people have warts, some people have chronic back pain. It didn't feel like there was anything I could really do about it. I was taking the iron. I was trying to get as much rest as I could.
But rest was hard to come by. Not long after the fainting incident, she opened a cafe in Brooklyn. And the excessive bleeding, the pain, and the weakness from the anemia, she just dealt with it.
It's incredible what you get used to, how you adjust, you know, to your own struggle, to your own pain.
But then the blood clot started.
A round, globby, very dark red blob. Sometimes it would be like very small, like the size of like raisins or peanuts. And the first time I remember it, I was taking a shower. Like it felt like I was about to like push out a teeny baby or something. I was like, what's that pressure? What's that pressure? And a blood clot like the size of an orange. And I had to like put my finger in the blood clot to get it to go down the drain.
A couple months later, Kalalea had a pelvic ultrasound. The doctor handed her the results, and he told her, "You have fibroids." And while she's trying to take in this new information, she's also trying to read the results.
And the findings were that the uterus measures 11.2.
And so it's hard to fully process when the doctor starts explaining what fibroids are. Like when he tells her that fibroids are benign tumors that can grow in and around the uterus. And that on rare occasions, they can be cancerous. But for the most part, fibroids are non-cancerous growths.
These are diffuse areas of heterogeneity within the myometrium.
He tells her how the number of fibroids that a person has can vary.
Converted, at least three masses or C within the uterus.
The size can vary too, from a few millimeters to the size of a baseball. 70 to 80% of women will get fibroids at some point during their reproductive years, normally in their 30s or 40s. A woman can have fibroids and not feel any negative effects, or they can cause, well, all the things that Kalalea has been going through. She had a bunch of small fibroids that were pushing on the walls of her uterus, which was causing her uterus to expand.
The uterus measures 11.2 by 8.7 by 9.2 centimeters.
A normal uterus is the size of a fist, but Kalalea's had swollen to the size of two fists. And when fibroids push into the wall of the uterus, it bulges out and there's more surface area for the buildup of tissue or endometrium, the lining that's shed during a menstrual cycle. So if there's a higher amount of surface area, there's more tissue that builds up, more tissue to be shed, and as a result, more bleeding. So that's what causes the excessive menstrual bleeding, the pain, and the anemia.
The doctor said he sees us a lot with people like me, Black women, because he's a Black doctor and most of his patients are Black. I believe him. I wanted to know more, like, why was this happening to me? What was going on? What caused them? But there didn't seem to be an explanation. It was more like, here are your results.
So if you Google fibroids, like Kalalea did, you'll find that African-American women are three times more likely to have fibroids and to develop severe symptoms as compared to white women. And if you keep Googling, you'll find studies linking this trend to everything from diet to genetics to even the use of hair relaxers. Here's Dr. Ebbie Stewart, a researcher at the Mayo Clinic.
So we don't really know what causes fibroids. It's really amazing given how many women have them. For many years, we just kind of relied on hysterectomy as a one-size-fits-all treatment and didn't investigate the basic biology and epidemiology. so that there are multiple risk factors that are associated with fibroids, but nothing that really can tell us why there's such a big disparity between black and white women. But there's also some evidence that the experience of stress and racism may actually be tied to fibroid risk. Various kinds of stress, including racism, can change biology, that stress hormones go up, that can have an effect on multiple body systems.
We talked to a couple doctors about this, and it's worth noting that there isn't enough data to scientifically prove direct causation between racism and fibroids. However, this connection between experiencing racism, chronic stress, and its effect on the body is part of a growing body of research. And that research really resonated with Kalalea.
Black bodies, black people, black women are just not as important as other people in this country. When I was a little girl, there wasn't Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, but my mother would say that we were going to stay home that day, so we would watch a series called Eyes on the Prize.
I know the one thing we did right, hey, was the day we started to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
And watching that, there was a story about a little boy named Emmett Till. A lot of people know this boy's story by now.
On August 21st, 1955, two teenagers from Chicago boarded a train and traveled south to visit family in Mississippi.
And apparently the story is that this woman, a white woman, said that he whistled to her or flirted with her or something like that. And that night, her husband and her brothers showed up at the house where Emmett Till was staying, banged on the doors.
4 days later, Emmett Till's body was found in the Tallahatchie River.
With a cotton gin machine around his neck, swollen body, he had been shot. This is a 14-year-old boy. And that is a story that I watched when I was like 12 or 13. To have that knowledge that something like that could happen to somebody that looked like my brother, and as I understand more about the body and our connection to spirit, to watch that during a time where my reproductive organs were forming as I was moving into puberty, how can I not have stress, internal stress, from just knowing that my skin could get me killed? And so how can that not affect my cycle? How can that not affect how I develop as a woman? I think pain is passed down. Pain is passed down.
As Kalalea sat in the doctor's office with the results in her hand, trying to process her new diagnosis, the doctor told Kalalea her options. They could try uterine embolization, a less invasive procedure, but there was the risk of infection and changes in sexual functioning, and it's not always effective. They could try a myomectomy, a surgery to remove the fibroids, but there was a good chance that the fibroids would eventually just grow back. One of the scary things about fibroid surgery is that oftentimes the surgeon can't know the severity of the fibroids before opening up the uterus, so you might go into the operating room not knowing if you'll come out with your uterus intact. And then there was also the option of choosing to have a hysterectomy, which is where they
take everything out. Everything. Your uterus, your ovaries, your fallopian tubes, everything.
Kalalea was not ready to take those chances. She did not want to have surgery.
I didn't really have a lot of faith in Western medicine overall. For things like this, like, it was just very clear that there hadn't been enough research or interest. And this country has a history of experimenting with Black people in particular. I mean, there's the Tuskegee syphilis experiment that lasted for like 40 years. When they had a cure for syphilis, they allowed Black men to basically die from a disease that was curable.
And so she decided to take the last and final option. No procedure, no surgery. By this point, Kalalea had spent years studying yoga and nutrition, and so she decided she was going to use everything that she knew about the body, her body, and that she was going to fight these fibroids herself.
I felt like I had the power, just like my body created them. I believed that I could get rid of them, that I could heal myself. I really truly believe that we are powerful in that way.
And so she went into healing mode. She ate raw calf's liver, she tried fasting, raw foods, acupuncture, Chinese herbs. She tried everything. And along the way, she saw improvements, like when she started doing Reiki, a Japanese energy healing practice. And she went from having pain 21 days each month to only 3 days of pain each month. Or like the time when she went in for an ultrasound and it showed that her uterus had actually shrunk a little bit in size.
That gave me a lot of hope in terms of like me being a part of the process to heal myself. But I was exhausted, you know, and I didn't feel like I was a part of the world anymore.
And for every gain she made through all of her efforts, the fibroids would inevitably retaliate.
The worst pain that I experienced was this feeling of a hot needle, like being inserted into my vagina. I would sometimes be walking down the street and I would literally have to stop and like hold on to something. It was a reminder that the fibroids were in control. I remember calling my mother one night. I was in tears, crying really hard, and I confessed to her that I was thinking of killing myself. I didn't really feel like I had a future. I kept thinking about the worst case scenario, which was having a hysterectomy. I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready.
But she was tired of suffering so much. And managing her fibroids was draining out what little energy she had. Then something clicked in her. If this was going to be her life, then why not live it in a paradise?
I felt so isolated that I didn't think it would be like such a big deal if I left the country, you know, like to live in a place that I wanted to live in. I figured that if I wanted drastic results, that I needed to make a drastic change.
And so in 2011, she gave up her life in New York and moved on her own to Bahia, Brazil.
It's a very magical, beautiful, special place. I haven't felt anything like it that had all the things that are really important to me, like nature, happy people, brown people, the ocean, good food, I can't forget music. I fell in love with Brazilian music.
The first week she arrived, her period came. It was time for her period ritual.
But on this day, I just was like, I can't stay at home. And so I took my bathing suit and I walked towards the ocean. It was only me on this beach. I took off my bikini bottoms and I walked into the ocean really slowly. And I was bleeding at the time, you know, and I just kept walking and going deeper and deeper and deeper and asking the ocean and asking the universe to please just cleanse me, like to rid me of this pain, to stop the bleeding. I don't know if I was asking for a miracle, but I just needed a reprieve. I did bleed in the ocean and I couldn't stop. Like, I just felt very alive, and it was the first time that I felt like healthy.
Living in Brazil, Kalalea did start feeling more healthy and she had less pain. She was learning Portuguese and she joined an all-women's capoeira team.
Capoeira is a Brazilian martial art that some enslaved Africans would practice together on plantations. They would play music and appear as if they were dancing, but what they really were doing was building strength.
Kalalea starts building strength too, and after months of training, it was finally time for the baptism, the batizado. To receive the next cord, kind of like a belt in karate, you have to go up against a more skilled capoeirista.
So during the batizado, you wear white, all white. So on the day of my batizado, I wake up and I got my period. So I just need to prepare myself. I take out one Brazilian maxi pad, which are no match for Stay Free maxi long overnight with wings. And I place it on my panty. And then I take three more maxi pads and stick it on top of that one. And then for extra measure, I insert one supersized tampon. And then I put on my white pants, white t-shirt, and grab my red hoodie. It was my turn. We shook hands, bowed, and began. You have to prove that you know the various moves. So the foundation of capoeira is jenga. That's where you rock back and forth. So it's like jenga, 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 and I'm moving. And then I decide, okay, I'm gonna go with my next move, skiva. And then that's good, great, jenga. Everything's going really well. Jenga, jenga, bend sound. Great, wonderful. I'm feeling so good. I'm feeling energized. This is really going well. I'm so happy. And then I decide, okay, I gotta do something a little bit more creative and show-offy. So I decide to do a mea lua. And it's basically where you kick one of your legs in like a circular motion. My first mea lua, I felt this like push in my womb. It's okay, I keep going, do another mea lua, go down, skiva, jenga, jenga, get up again, one more mea lua, and bam. I can feel it. By this time, I know what's happening. I'm bleeding. I'm bleeding because I can see it on the faces of my fellow capoeiristas. The mestre who I'm playing with, the master, he stops. And I just run. I grab my red sweatshirt and I wrap it around my waist. And I just kneel down so to hide the bottom half of my body.
She got her green cord that day, but within a few months, she was very anemic. Too weak to practice, dizzy all the time, and afraid she'd faint again.
I realized that it was time to go back to the States, that I had to do something about it, and that maybe surgery was the way. I had always feared that having surgery could mean me losing my uterus. And it's crazy because I actually never... Not never, but I wasn't interested in having children. But I wanted to come to that conclusion and to make that decision on my own. I didn't want anyone to make it for me. I was a 42-year-old woman, so the likelihood of me having children was very unlikely. So what was I holding on to?
I think Kalalea was holding on to more than having children. She was holding on to her power to control her body, to have agency over her organs. And then delaying surgery for so long, while of course it meant years of pain, it also brought her to a place where she felt like she could do this surgery on her own terms. She was ready. It was time to get the fibroids out. She moved back to New York. She did her research, carefully chose a doctor, a woman, and she made an appointment.
So I told her, if I'm going to have surgery, I need to be clear about what's most important to me.
She opened up her notebook and read her surgery wish list to the doctor.
I'd like to have a normal to strong libido. I'm okay with not having children. I really would prefer a vaginal procedure, please. No cutting my stomach. I really want to be able to wear a bikini one day in the near future.
The doctor looked her in her eyes when she spoke. Kalalea knew she was listening. The doctor ordered some pre-surgery blood work. The results showed that her anemia was back, and she was sent to get a blood transfusion right away. This would be her third blood transfusion in 5 years. Finally, they set the date for the surgery. And then Kalalea started to very intentionally visualize the surgery.
I would sit in silence a lot and really try to have a conversation with my womb. I remember hearing a voice say, "It's not going to be easy."
The morning of the surgery, Kalalea met with a team of 3 women doctors who would be performing the surgery. She gathered them around her and looked into their eyes.
I said, "Okay, this is what's probably going to happen. You're not going to be able to get it out. Fibroid, it's not going to be able to come out of my body. So I want you guys to look at each other, take a deep breath 3 times, look at each other and try it again. And if you can just do that 3 times, look at each other, take 3 deep breaths, try again. Look at each other, 3 deep breaths, keep trying. You're going to be able to get it, but it's not going to be easy. If after the 3rd time you look and I'm losing blood and it doesn't feel like I'm going to make it through, cut me. But please take your time. We can do this together." And we put our hands together. And I said, "We can do this. I love all of you. I don't even know you very well, but I have so much respect for the work you do." And they were like, "Okay, we're going to do it." And we hugged, and then we put me on the gurney. He said, "What do you want to listen to?" We could listen to music. And I said, "Brazilian music, for sure." And yeah, and then next thing you know, I was asleep. I woke up, and they were over me. And they looked at me over the bed and said, "You were right. It was so hard, but we did what you told us to do. We took a deep breath and we took our time and we got it out. So you had a vaginal, we didn't have to cut you." I felt so connected to humanity, and to these women, and to my own body. I felt like I can do it.
It's been 5 years since Kalalea had surgery. Today, she is healthy and pain-free. No more period rituals. No more stay-free, long, overnight maxi pads with wings. As we close, I just want to say thanks for your response to episode 1. Thank you for your emails, the shares, your participation in the Facebook group. It's really been incredible. This is what Bodies is about, open conversations with one another. This week on the Bodies Facebook group, we'll have links to studies and stories that look into the impact of racism on health. There will also be resources about fibroids. And as always, the Facebook group is a place for discussion, a place to share your stories and reactions to the episodes. Nothing is off the table and everyone is welcome. You can find a link to the Bodies Facebook group in the show notes or by going to kcrw.com/bodies. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Bodies Podcast and me at Albie Tweetin. That's Albtweetin. Also, if you have a medical mystery that you think could be a fit for the show, I'd love to talk to you. Email me, allison@bodiespodcast.com. If you like Bodies, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find the show, and thanks to everyone who already wrote one. Finally, Southern California listeners, stick around after the credits for an invitation to a Bodies live event in LA. If you don't hear anything, unfortunately, that means the event's at capacity. This episode was produced by me, Allison Berenger. It was also produced by Kalaliyah. Kalaliyah would like to express gratitude to her mom and brother and some dear friends from Brooklyn and Brazil who supported her during this time, as well as the three surgeons who exercised compassion and understanding. Editorial advising by Sharon Mashihi, Caitlin Prest, Camila Kerwin, and Kristen Lepore. Special thanks also to Whitney Henry Lester, Chiquita Pascal, and Caitlin Pierce, who provided additional feedback on this episode. Original score and sound design by Dara Hirsch. The song On the Beach was composed by Michael Bushes and Alejandro Salazar, and recorded by Lorenzo Wolf. The capoeira music was recorded in Brazil by Sufiano Racci with Mestre Sapoti. Additional music from Audio Network and meditation sounds by C. Meeson. Cover artwork by Sarah Bachman. Episode art by Kathy Farthing. Bodies is made with support from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. Special thanks to managing editor Kristen Lepore, as well as Nick White and the whole KCRW team. I'm Allison Berenger, and this is Bodies. See you in 2 weeks.